Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, host of Full Service Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this show, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, and welcome to Taste of the Past. I'm your host, Linda Palacio, here at heritageradionetwork.org. And, you know, it used to be, not that many of you could remember, but I certainly can, you would go to buy a loaf of bread at your local grocery store or bakery, and about the only thing you could find on the shelf would be a spongy, plastic-wrapped log of pre-sliced sandwich bread. And fortunately for us, a lot of that has changed. You could go into a lot of the what we would call European bakeries or old school, old family bakeries, and you could find some old crusty loaves, not old crusty, but fresh crusty loaves. But it really was not very widely available. And fortunately for us, there has been a movement of artisan bakeries and artisan bread makers. And with me today is one of the pioneers of the artisan bread baking movement, Lionel Vatinet. And Lionel, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Lindo.
Lionel actually is, as I say, he was a pioneer of the artisan bread baking world. And in fact, he was a founding instructor at San Francisco Baking Institute in the 90s, the first school that was devoted to bread baking. And he himself did a lot of schooling to become a master baker. Lionel is a master baker of the French Guild, and I'll have him explain what that means. He's consulted for many of the best bread bakeries in the U.S., and he has opened La Farm Bakery, which is where he is now, in North Carolina, in Cary, North Carolina, correct?
He's correct, yes.
Correct. And it's been 15 years that he's been there. And Savour Magazine recognized it as one of the best bread bakeries in the U.S. And we might even say, well, we're not going to say in the world, but you know, there's another Lionel who was with us for a long time, who was a great Poilin, who was a fabulous baker as well. Lionel, what did I leave out? We will fill in the gaps of your background as we go along, because I want to know, what does it take to become a French master baker?
Your life.
You started when?
I was 16 years old, and I'm still 17, so I'm not such a pioneer, as you say. But I don't know what start to be a bread baker, but you know, definitely, as soon as you touch, you know, the dough and you smell, you know, the oven, you may be hooked up, and you can become one for sure.
Right. So you had to apprentice, you had to study with other master bakers? Or
I belong to a guild, Les Compagnons du Devoir. It's a craftsman guild, you know.
Is this one of the guilds like that started way back in the Middle Ages?
It's correct, even farther down, you know, when Temple of Solomon been built, so a little bit older, you know. With carpenter and stonemaker start the guild. And the bakers joined the guild in the 17th century.
17th century, wow. That's a long time.
It's
right?
A long time, yes, definitely.
Right. And so when you came to America, what made you come to America to start baking here?
It was a call from a gentleman in Washington, D.C. 22 years ago. Need some help of to produce more than two loaves, you know, at a time, and but in the to bring some good bread to Washington D.C. and I came in, and for me it was a stop. Didn't know I was going to stay, and it's been a 22-year stop. So
well, we're happy to have you. I must say, right? you've seen, and 22 years ago, I mean, during that time, you have seen a tremendous growth in the quality of America's bread, and in the, well, specifically in the artisan bread movement. Can you tell me a little bit about that and what the roots that you see, how it started?
It was very sporadic, you know. 22 years ago was already quite few little bakery where, you know, if I say little, not doesn't mean the size, but were doing, you know, good quality bread, but not streamed to everybody to know how to make good bread. So it was starting, and it did take quite a bit of time, you know, to develop and schooling. SFBI was one of them, you know, to help people to learn how to work, how to make good bread, put it this way. So, so this was one, and to do a lot of trade show, and to, and we still educate a lot our customer, no matter what.
Right. Well, I know I was reading your background, and I see that you were brought in as a consultant for a lot of well-known bakeries and restaurants around the country, and I think that that is certainly to your credit that you are recognized, that they will call you to bring you in to say, teach us how to make bread.
Right. And what was the beauty of to have shared with them, you know, is for we are touching more consumer who can appreciate now a crusty, well fermented loaf of bread.
Well fermented, that's a big part of one of my next questions, but before I get there, what, when you started baking and trying to recreate those iconic French loaves, what were some of the challenges that you faced in baking in America with our product?
Definitely to have, you know, also, we start with flour. So flour, you know, we did have access only to a very big mill, you know, and also the flour was bleached and bromated, and you know, so a lot of stuff we didn't want to have, you know, to be able, we want to keep it, to keep the flour as natural as it come and it should be. And so this was one of our biggest challenges.
Yeah, I guess. Well, you indeed have gone on to reintroduce a lot of ancient grains and heirloom variety grains, and you're working with farmers. What types of grains are you using now in some of these special breads?
So we, our very excitement was, you know, to be part, you know, in North Carolina. We have from the farmers, you know, to the millers, and us, how to use the flour, you know, it's been a very fantastic marriage, something, you know, I did experience in the past in France, where we have much smaller mill who are constantly in contact with the bakers and to talk about, you know, the milling and also the season, you know, and the grain himself, the what we are going to. So to see that, you know, happening this past 5 to 7 years, you know, in North Carolina, and he start to go abroad all over, you know, the country, you know, as a sustainable, but, you know, and to be able to understand, you know, from the season, you know, to the milling, you know, what it's going to bring to the consumer at the end, you know, are going to be incredible.
So, and the effects that it's going to create in a loaf of bread, right?
I mean, and yeah, right. Exactly. You
know, for, I mean, anyone who bakes and kind of gets into it a little bit knows the difference between hard winter wheat and soft wheat and red wheat. And yeah. I'm talking like I know, but I don't really.
More than some other form.
Yeah. And any other grains, some of the ancient grains, I read that you were experimenting with spelt. Were you spelt and some of the others?
Definitely, you know, and right now we just, you know, for this past 30 years, you know, where we use, you know, several of the same farmers, you know, we are, is an hard, you know, wheat, you know, and is grown, you know, in the winter wheat. So is what we've been working mainly, and we continue to explore, you know, some other, you know, with rye, and we talk about Kamut also, and some other one, you know, coming along. So, but it takes, you know, some season to grow. It takes, you know, we also the importance of the mill Carolina ground is stone ground, so also is a big plus, you know.
It's stone ground. Wow. Stone ground. Where did you find a mill big? Stone Mill.
So her name is Jennifer Lapillus, who find it, and she went for an Austrian mill. You know, she find, you know, I don't remember the whole story about it, you know, but
and she brought it back to the U.S.
And she brought it back to the U.S. You know, and were able, you know, to put this, you know, in place, and we have a lot of fun, and it come out, you know, the results are incredible.
Yeah, and there's, I know a lot of people are trying to, well, not trying to, they do, they grind their own flour and the grains in, like, tabletop, countertop mills.
Right.
And that's not easy, and yeah, I'm sure you get a much different product on a tabletop mill than you would on a large stone.
Indeed, you know, the stone, you know, grinding, you know, you get everything of the grain. Is not so much, you know, extraction, you know, so where, you know, the other mill you extract the germ and the endosperm and so on and so forth. So with, you know, or for the people who do this at home, they are going to need, it's going to be a difference when as if they make bread right away or if they wait, you know, to using it, you know, and they add a level of another level of expertise, you know. It's already, it was simple with four ingredients, but now when you grind up, you know, as you go or you let, you know, your flour relax, you know, you're going to get different water absorption and fermentation time, so on and so forth.
Well, that was a question that I had, which now you've partially answered. Do these freshly milled flours have to be treated differently, or even some of the old grains, do they have to be treated differently to produce a loaf of bread or to bake with?
Indeed, you know, it starts with what was the weather, you know, to how it grew until the harvesting of the grain, you know, are going to play a big role, you know, how we are going to be able to use it. And until we use, you know, the first time, we don't know what we're going to get. So it's going to be after at least one trial or two, you know, to see what type of adjustment we have to make, you know, with the water, you know, hydration. And fermentation time. So so we are lucky, we are the last stage, you know, where we can make a change to make, you know, the loaf delicious.
Well, you mentioned that the freshly milled flour had to rest or relax for a while. And that's interesting. Something that people might not know at home, if they're, you know, they have their countertop mill and they maybe try to grind it and bake with it right away. And
you can, but you are going to also end up with some a little bit more denser. You know, when you grind, you know, you stressed, you know, so and result the flour, you know, so let him, you know, a little bit of rest, you know, can be helpful.
And what about soaking the grains? I have heard that some of the older grains really needed to be soaked first.
When it's an add-on, you know, it can be germinate to get some germination to it, you know, or to soften the grain, or it can be too crunchy, you know, or too hard, you know, for the mash, you know, of your bread. So you want to soak them, you know, definitely.
Well, I was had the pleasure of reading through your book, and that I want to mention to our listeners. The book is called A Passion for Bread, Lessons from a Master Baker. And you have a wonderful, I'm going to say, before we get right into the recipes of the book, you give a wonderful explanation of the processes and what really goes into setting up your dough for making a bread. And you have referred to fermentation often, and we all know that you need leavening agents for bread. Tell me about some of the different leavening agents and how that affects the bread and the taste.
So the essence of baking is fermentation. And these four ingredients, one of them are yeast, natural or commercial, and you can have different use and how long. If it's natural, it's going to be more some acidity coming with that, you know. So, and chewiness also at the end, you know, when it's been, the chrome is developed. Now, with commercial yeast, you can develop a poolish, for example.
A poolish. I saw that word used. I'm going, poolish? Is there a typo here? What is a poolish?
It was probably start was by Poland, you know.
Polish. But
Polish,
they,
you know, and so yeah, he ended up to be
poolish.
And he's a very liquid fermentation, you know.
It's like a slurry, sort of like a...
He's correct. Yeah. He's going to give you some nutty taste, you know, at the end product. So this, you know, can is quite incredible.
How does... But and now, because I read the pool about the Polish, and that you do allow it to ferment just a little bit, right?
Yeah, it can be... It's a minimum of... is 8 to 12 hours.
Because you know? I was wondering, how does that differ from a sourdough starter?
Because the Polish are made with commercial yeast to start with.
Okay.
And sourdough are, you know, the yeast, you know, you have a culture and you feed on with flour and water.
Mm-hmm. And are you not experimenting with some beer breads?
Yeah, yes, exactly. Yeah? We do, you know, getting ready for Oktoberfest for us, you know, also is a... Our 15th anniversary, you know, bread, you know, is the same month. So we've been experiencing, you know, with some local beer, you know. The most difficult part was to get the taste of the beer through the bread, you know. So this was a little bit challenging, you know, but we succeed with some stout beer, you know. And
Well, if you use beer, do you have to use yeast in addition, or is it just the fermentation of the that's natural, that's in the beer that you use?
We use, you know, the three from the beer, natural and commercial.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's still a very long fermentation because those stout, you know, beer have tendency to be pretty high in alcohol. So you need to balance a little bit, yes.
All right. Well, I have a lot of more questions about ovens and types of breads, but we have to take a short break. So stay tuned because we're going to talk more about a passion for bread when we come back with Lionel Vatinet.
You are listening to Wood, Brass, and Steel Band. Long live music.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
Hi, and we are back with Lionel Vatinet here on A Taste of the Past, and his book is A Passion for Bread, Lessons from a Master Baker. And Lionel, you kind of glossed over all of your time in the Guild, and I have, during the break, learned that it is a seven-year apprenticeship, or working with all the different master bakers, and it's not just, you know, you just don't enter and study, but 7 years you have to stay with them, right?
Five to ten, you know.
5 to 10?
I was not the slowest or the fastest.
Nah,
but, you know.
Okay. But you did say it was the best time of your life, right?
Indeed, you know, it was, you are 16 years old or 16 to 20, and you travel France or Europe, and now the world is open to the world. So you live in community, you learn, you know, your trade, and... the camaraderie are incredible, and they also bring to you some spirituality, you know, in this community life, incredible.
Well, if you think of the history of bread, there's a tremendous amount of spirituality involved in the staff of life. I mean, it really, And so I guess that 7 or 5 to 10 year period separates the wheat from the chaff, if you will. Excuse my my analogy with the wheat. But indeed, I mean, you truly then, you know, the ones who have a passion for it stick around, right?
Yeah, indeed, yes. You know, the selection is, or the dropout, you know, is pretty high too. So you want to stick, you know, around, you know, you need to be dedicated and passionate. And and the one of the most important is to, you want to share, you know, your knowledge to the youngest. So this is what I continue to do.
And that's something that I really want to talk about. And that is that you're teaching. You feel that that's, you're really a teacher,
and,
right?
And that is my call, really. You know, I
to
think, you know, to be a teacher and to share, you know, I think, you know, every culinarian should share what they know. You cannot feel like you have a secret, you know. You need to be brought up, and after that, you hope people are going to make their own interpretation and to be successful with the basic, at least.
All right. Well, you have brought with you a few loaves that you baked. Unfortunately, you just flew in from North Carolina to New York, and bread doesn't always travel all that well, but it looks pretty good to me. Tell me a little bit about the baking process. Do you, what types of ovens do you have at your bakery, and what do you use, or
so
oven?
We've been in business for 15 years in Kerry, and we last May was a big change for us. We switched oven, so a bakery with no bread oven was for 8 days was a bit challenging, for sure. But so we switched an old French for a young German. You know, it's a joke, you know, but technology is, you know, is stone on the bottom, is a steam injection, well built, so create, you know, the steam you're looking for. And
and what is the source of heat?
Is gas.
Is gas.
Is gas, correct. Okay. So is a 6 decks, you know, and we can produce with a ultimum quality we're looking for, you know, for the spring of the loaf and the crust, you know, are going to come out, you know, and and they make so much progress, you know, with the technology also, so this can be helpful, you know.
Even heat. And
exactly, right.
That's one thing that I will never quite understand is, you know, baking a loaf of bread in a wood-fired oven when your heat is, you know, I mean, I see you brush your coals away, right? But keeping that heat even must be a real trick.
The tricky part is you are in sync with your oven, meaning, you know, what type of dough you're going to start with, because it's very hot, and how you go down is when come, you know, the rounder, bigger, you know, slower cooking desired. So is what you're looking for. Yes, it's another art, you know, in baking, right. You should have for sure.
Well, like anyone, they have to know the hot spots of your oven, right?
Indeed, yep, correct.
Which is hot, which is cold. You have some fabulous recipes in the book as well. What intrigued me, and I didn't expect it at all, were a lot of the stuffed breads. Is that something that's traditionally French?
Not at all, but my better half, you know, my wife, who are also understanding what consumer want, and we are, you know, as an American, you know, you need also to adapt to what the people want, you know, and they are definitely love, you know, to have not just plain, but with something in. So when you announce a product, you better find. So the best way was to stuff, you know, some baguette, you know, with several local products and such.
It all looks wonderful to me, and as to these loaves of bread. Today, you have just the one bakery, the large bakery, however.
Today, we have artisan bread bakery, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. On average, how many loaves of bread do you produce a day?
We produce 1,000 loaves a day.
Wow.
You know. But still, you know, hands on, you know, still we come at midnight, you know, to start our shift, you know, when you're sleeping, we're baking, and when you arrive, you know, as early as 7, you have some smell and a fresh loaf of bread, you know, coming out of the oven, and it was, you know, with different type of fermentation, but we still make it, you know, fresh every day.
I pity the people who live nearby having to put up with those smells. It keeps them up all night, I'm sure, waiting, yeah. Right?
Indeed.
Right. Is there anything that you have planned in your near future for dealing with bread in the U.S.?
I continue to do the work, you know, with the farmer and develop even a more relationship with, you know, what we can grow in our surrounding and what can be milled and what can be brought up to the consumer as a good base of nutrition, you know, and so it's what we continue to do, you know, and continue for me to teach, you know, really 15 years ago, I start to teach more home bakers. That is why this, the book Passion for Bread came out, just to so people can enjoy to make their own loaf of bread at home.
You know, and that just reminded me of something I saw in the book. Indeed, you know, that a tip and a trick for a home baker. A lot of people know about La Cloche method of baking breads in those, you know, the, in the stoneware with the lids on them. And they run out and buy all this expensive equipment. But you have in there a tip for using a stainless steel bowl. Can you tell me about that?
Sure. You know, so the same one you should use to bring all your ingredients. You know, you're going to use it later to put, you know, above your stone, if you have one, or
like a pizza stone, or
pizza
whatever,
stone, yeah, or steel plate, you know, and you, as soon, you know, you have scored and slide your loaf of bread in your oven, you need to cover it up right away with your with a stainless steel bowl, and 10 minutes later, pull out and finish baking. So,
all right, so now you have to tell our listeners, why do you need to cover it with the stainless steel, or you know, the cloche,
to,
or the
stainless
steel bowl?
To create steam. Steam. Okay. And steam are going to slow down your baking process and your caramelization.
So you're telling me the method of taking a bottle of spray water and spraying my pizza stone while the bread's baking isn't good enough? Is that not working?
It can be, you know, damaging your oven, you know.
Yeah.
And on a long run, these are the probably the easiest, you know, the most efficient way to create steam, you know, on your loaf of bread.
Yeah, it seemed like such a reasonable thing to do, just take the same stainless steel. I went, whoa, you know, a light went off. I said, well, I said, why didn't I think of that? Because I'm not a master baker. That's why I didn't think of it. Well, that's excellent. What has been probably the most popular bread at your bakery?
The one, you know, you see on the picture of the book is, we call it La Farm.
La Farm, a country loaf.
Country,
yeah,
loaf, you, yeah, know, is a signature bread, you know, is something I developed as a masterpiece also when I finished a guild. And it was a lot of meaning, you know, for the big loaf you can share, you know, you can, family members was much more than we have right now. So in the household, they were making a big loaf of bread. So I have a lot of, you know, either from the farm to table to everything, you know, is connected to this loaf of bread over there.
You know, I think you should make some, well, you do, because I see one sitting in front of me, a nice loaf, but, you know, some of those dense loaves, because, you know, in the ancient times, in ancient Rome, through the medieval times, they, you know, just used the bottom half of that. Well, it was a flat loaf because they didn't have the leavening, as a trencher, and that's what they served the food on. Ooh, can you imagine a nice, juicy lamb stew being served on a nice round of crusty bread? And that was your, when you finished the lamb, you eat the bread. And
exactly. What,
or you gave it to the poor, right, if you were full, right?
Yes,
what a wonderful idea. And the bread looks perfect for breaking into with your hands and just enjoying. And you mentioned health issues, and you know, there's so much of this, the craze of gluten-free diets and low-carb diets going on. And certain people, I do, you know, understand they have a problem with gluten, they can't eat it.
Exactly.
But for those who are just avoiding bread, let's say for a low-carb diet, bread, if it's made with good grain, there are a lot of health benefits, right?
It's good for you, yes. You know, back in the history, you know, war or revolution started because there was no bread on the table. Now we talk about, you know, those type of diet. Maybe we need to look at, you know, where it's come from. Maybe the how it's been milled, how it's been, you know, which grain is being used. Because you can live on bread, you know, and if it's anything else, you know, people can make it also and continue to have a level of nutrition to live on. I think it's important. We, as you earlier, you ask, you know, I say we're still educating not just about the crust, about, you know, long fermentation, but, you know, also what, you know, flour, you know, we've been using and how good is for you, you know. And making bread is four ingredients: flour, water, salt, and yeast. So we better let know people what we do.
What about long? What's the difference between the long? Explain the longer fermentation and the quick fermentation, and such as like sourdough breads and.
So, I say to people, if you smell or taste yeast when you eat a bread, maybe you need to change, you know, providers or your recipe. Now, commercial yeast, you know, is a 5 to 10 hour process, put it this way. You know, you can get, you know, a loaf of bread, so it's going to make it crispy, not as chewy inside, you know, so, and compared to a sourdough where you have a feeding process, you know, you feed the yeast, you know, and 8 hours later you can using it to make leaven your bread, and 8 hours or 24 hours later you can bake your bread. So this is a sourdough. This is what, you know, natural leaven is. And you can develop different, you know, acidity, lactic or very acetic, and it's up to the baker to choose, you know, what they want to make.
Yeah, I can smell it baking already, right? And it looks wonderful, and I'm sure it tastes wonderful. I have not cracked into it. But I thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us on the radio. And if anyone's out in Cary, North Carolina, I urge you to visit La Farm Bakery. And it's Lionel Vatinet. The name of the book is A Passion for Bread, Lessons from a Master Baker. And thank you so much, Lionel.
Thank you, Linda.
This has been A Taste of the Past, and I'm your host, Linda Palacio.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.